You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Peck.
Thank you. And a big shout out to the iconic voice of Esther Lynn as we welcome you to a brand new edition of Between the Links. Thank you for joining us. As you know, a lot to talk about. Seems to be the case every week in MMA, but especially this week after UFC 264 has been wrapped and packed. A lot of MMA for us to consume this coming weekend as well. And yes, we will discuss the robot this week. The robot that made lots of headlines, but let us not waste any time. Let us introduce the combatants. No tag team match. We're going old school one-on-one. First off, joining the program for the first time, an old colleague, an old co-worker back in the day when we were both over at Fansided MMA. I was just cutting my teeth in this crazy sport of ours. He's now doing a lot of stuff on his own website, as well as UFC.com. A great talent in our space. Let us say hello to Mr. E. Spencer Kite. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here and back on the show in this Canada versus Canada matchup. Back-to-back wins for this man. One as a solo competitor, one as a member of a team, a championship team at that. His team, known as the King and I, alongside Kristen King, defeated Jed Meshew and Fernanda Prachas last week. Let us say hello to the Prince of Positivity and the birthday boy, Mr. Alex Cayley. How are you, buddy?
You know, guys, you know, Mike, when I'm talking to you guys, when I'm doing shows like this, every day is my birthday. This is true. Yeah, I love it. But yes, listen, I want to say last week I may have won and Chris and I may have won, I should say. Really, you know, Jed and Fernanda kind of defeated themselves, really more so Jed, but I'll take the win anyway. It is official, as you guys can see here. It is now 5 W's, 2 in a row. But yes, today is it will be a win, not just for myself, but for my tag team partner, Chris and King. King and I, merchandise coming soon.
Excellent. So let's get right into this thing. There's no time like the present to discuss the fallout of UFC 264, because no one has done that yet. No one has done that at all this week. So we'll just go ahead and do it right now and open Pandora's box, if you will. Most notably, let us discuss the main event between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. I don't need to go into the whole thing. You all know what happened by now, but there have been stories within the story, including an interesting piece of information provided by Conor McGregor a little earlier today, which we will get to in a moment. But Spencer, let's begin with you. Let's just say 5 years from right now, somebody comes up to you, some MMA fan says, "Hey, Spencer, what comes to the top of your mind when you think of Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 3? That whole fight, that whole night, what came out of it? What's the first thing that you would tell them about?"
Probably Jolie Poirier giving Conor McGregor the finger in the middle of the octagon. An iconic image Thank you to whoever captured it. If somebody wants to put it on a t-shirt, my DMs are open. I will purchase several. Really, it's Dustin rising above. It's sort of the way that whole thing played out between Connor being old Connor and crossing some lines and saying some stuff that felt classless to me. And Dustin just remaining largely the classy individual that he is, threw a couple words in there, you know, had a few shots in there, did the Billy Strut himself a little bit, but for the most part made it about his performance and the fight itself and being a competitor. And so for me, it's sort of that play between the two of them. And of course, as I said, Jolie getting her little message in there to Connor as well.
AK, your thoughts, like how do you feel in the future you will remember that night, remember that fight and everything that has come from it?
And I'll be telling everybody about the hero of heroes, Tai Tuivasa, who, goodness, a man could not have had a more inspiring evening. I'm glad Spencer went outside the main, essentially went outside the two main event competitors and went with the main event a competitor associate, the wonderful Julie Poirier. Because I'm also going, I'm going with Tuivasa. It's not just, again, however people feel about Greg Hardy, people know I'm not a fan. So it's not just him putting away Greg Hardy, which was fantastic. The man comes out to, I think what we can all agree is an all-time classic, Wannabe by the Spice Girls. And just changes the whole mood of the card. I mean, to that point, we'd seen some pretty spectacular stuff, but it still felt like a solid UFC card. He took it to another level. He gave people something they clearly had never seen before, a grown man at the UFC level walking out to the Spice Girls. He had previously walked out to My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion, which I know Spencer and I, of course, can both appreciate, as she's a Canadian icon. So that was a little shout outs for us. And then afterwards, I hate shoeys, but the man deserved it. Seeing the man just go shoey to shoey to shoey, the poor guy getting blasted with a hot sauce shoey. But, he grinned and he bared through it all. So for me, I'll be telling people about the night that Tai Tuivasa just changed all of our lives. It was such an immaculate performance from entrance to exit.
All right, so let us get into a big story that dropped today. It was from, not really a story, just a video that was released from one Conor McGregor, because we've heard all different things and different angles of things that were said, but today people have gotten all sorts of inquisitive. There's lots of questions being asked, not towards Conor, but now towards the UFC, because Conor McGregor drops around a 6 or so minute video on his Instagram page, and he talked about the latest in regards to his injury, his broken tibia. He's riding around in a motorized scooter, singing rap songs, and he seemed in pretty good spirits. But in the midst of all this, he said that he went into this fight with Dustin Poirier injured. And not only that, he said the UFC was aware of it. So let me pull this up. Here's what he said. I was injured going into the fight. People are asking me, when was the leg broke? At what point did the leg break? Ask Dana White, ask the UFC, ask Dr. Davidson, the head doctor of the UFC. They knew I had stress fractures in my leg going into the cage. There was debate about pulling the thing out because I was sparring without shin pads and I would kick the knee a few times. So I had multiple stress fractures in the shin bone above the ankle. And then I have trouble with the ankle anyway throughout the years of effing fighting all the time. And I also was wrapping the ankle every training session. So AK, he also said that this injury, in a bizarre way, essentially was a blessing in disguise because it forced him to get treatment on this leg. What is your reaction to what Conor McGregor had to say today and his comments in that 6 minute Instagram video?
First off, let me address one of the comments on our YouTube asking, where is Jed? I'll answer that one real quick. Who cares? The second thing I want to do is, Mike, if I may, is directly attack Spencer, because yes, look, we're Canadian, we're all friends here. But I will say, Spencer writes wonderful profiles for UFC.com. if you guys like, anytime lead up to fight night, you want to know more about some of these fighters, Spencer's always writing stuff, in case you're wondering what these guys been up to, maybe why they were out of action. So compliments to him for that. But I bet Spencer, he should lose this round automatically, because I bet he knew all about Why don't you tell us, Spencer, about your exclusive interview you had with Conor McGregor, where he tells you all about his leg problems. This whole thing could have been avoided. Poor Conor McGregor goes in there. You should have shared with the world what was wrong with poor Conor McGregor, who clearly has been dealing with these serious injuries for God knows how long, according to his video today. So yes, while I would love to answer this question, Mike, I'm happy to push it on to Spencer first, because I want answers. Why, Spencer, did you not tell America that Conor McGregor's legs just essentially did not work going into Saturday's card? What happened, Spencer?
I really do apologize for all of that inside information that I most certainly did not have. my connections, I have, you know, back when Conor started, I have been over to Ireland and met him and John Kavanaugh and a bunch of the team at SBG when they were in the old warehouse days, back just after his debut. That relationship really hasn't maintained very well since he became a global superstar and the wealthiest athlete in the world. He doesn't really care to talk to Canadian journalists from Abbotsford, British Columbia anymore. There are bigger people in his world than I am. So I sadly didn't have any of that inside information. And I understand the tactic. I appreciate the tactic. I appreciate the kind words about my work. But yeah, I had no inside information on this one and have to bow out of holding responsibility for not telling people about Conor's shins.
AK, I mean, you're not the, I mean, stop trying to take the hosting duties and try to veer this conversation the way you think. I asked you a question. I want answers, AK. I want answers from you.
What was the question again?
Are you kidding me?
That was like 2 minutes ago.
The reaction to the video and what he said about not only the injury, but the UFC knowing about it.
The reaction to the video. Okay. Mike, that's a hell of an allegation. Because he specifically says he doesn't just go, you know, he didn't just do like a vague hand wave like, oh, some people knew about this. He says Dana White knew about it. The UFC, whatever that means, officials, matchmakers, Dr. Davidson, the longtime official physician of the UFC. These are really serious. And presumably, of course, this includes the Las Vegas Commission, the Nevada Athletic Commission. So this is a really serious thing to throw out there. Obviously, I can tell you, we've reached out to the UFC. Unsurprisingly, they have not commented on this particular situation. I don't think they're in a hurry to address it. But look, this is just classic excuse making. I'm not saying he couldn't have issues. He couldn't have had issues with his legs. But what could be different about him than so many other fighters that go into the UFC? And again, he's also not the first fighter to come up with excuses. So I'm not saying like, oh, this is such a McGregor thing to do. All fighters do it. It's becoming a chronic thing with him. It always seems to be something now when he loses. I was inefficient with my energy. The calf kicks caught me off guard. You know, I was focusing more on boxing than MMA in the second Poirier fight. So it's becoming an issue. And if people want to buy these excuses, that's fine. I understand a lot of fans of his want to find a way to maintain their faith in him. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's he needs to maintain his own confidence, his own marketability. He's going to be on the shelf for a while, so there's no reason for him to go into this. I guess there's no reason to go into this stretch of inactivity with any sort of plan for introspection. The man doesn't change. The man doesn't change. That's part of his brand. So while these kinds of claims of again having this injury and everyone knowing about it, I don't love it. I don't think it's great, but. Do I think he's going to retract the same point? Does he think this is bad for his brand? Not at all. This is classic excuse making, and he's not the first guy to do it. He won't be the last, and it certainly won't be the last time that he does it.
Spencer, what did you think of this thing? Because I had two different thoughts. One was kind of with AK, like, wow, you're throwing it all out there. Like you're throwing these guys under the bus.
Yeah.
But at the same token, I'm thinking to myself, and I haven't actually seen like any medical clearance paperwork in terms of the Nevada Commission, but if you have these, you know, if you have these injuries, I think you're supposed to declare that you have these injuries. So chances are he didn't even declare these injuries. So is this Conor just saying, listen, if I'm going down, y'all going down with me?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to find out if this is Conor just saying stuff or if this is like real. And I mean, let's be clear. There have been lots of athletes as AK said, that have not declared stuff in the past, that have come out afterwards and said, well, hand was broken. I had a fractured skull. I had a broken back, all of those different things. And so this isn't a new tactic, but it is a big one because he does put specific names to it with Dana, with Dr. Davidson, with the UFC. And so that side of it will be interesting to figure out. My first takeaway from the video is that I want to see like the next 6 months, just a Connor Instagram live series of him driving around on a Rascal scooter in California. Like I just cruise down the beach, people shouting at him, him cursing people out. Like that's entertaining to me. Give me that Conor McGregor show. Give me that version of things as opposed to the guy we saw last week that was back to being a jackass and saying stuff that is off color and off putting. Give me playful, fun, charming Conor. And then let's just let the excuse making and all of that stuff subside, because I think at the end of the day, it really just is trying to find a way to rationalize what happened and trying to find a way to justify what happened, which, as AK said, it happens every time. I mean, can't y'all remember that Nathan Diaz was naturally a heavyweight in that fight and poor little Conor went in there trying to, like, this is just how it goes, right? And if he really did have fractured shins and chronically bad ankles, it's like a lot of smart people on Twitter said today, then the absolute best strategy sure was to go out there and just start spamming kicks right off the bat, just to see how those fractured shins are going to hold up.
I love how Scooter Connor is now a thing.
Inside the
MMA either. It's great.
Give me all of it. Like 6 months of just him going to get yogurt, him cruising down the beach. Like, you know, there's going to be like, isn't there a Conor McGregor impersonator out that way that like they're going to connect up and do the like buddy cop movie? Like, give it to me. Give me that. Let me see it. The family's coming out. It'd be great. Take the kids for a ride on the scooter.
I like it. In light of all of this, and we're not going to get into the ugliness of it all with some of the things that were said, because listen, it's been beaten to death. Everybody's talked about it. Paul Felder cut a delightful promo about it, and we're just going to kind of leave it at that. So things did get ugly along the way, but you could even make the argument that because of the ugliness, it seems that Dana White, Conor McGregor, and Dustin Poirier all want a fourth fight. They all want a fourth fight. And things have gotten very personal between the two guys, and rightfully so. And although there isn't full closure, there are a lot of people that have seen enough here, Spencer. So where are you at on this? Like, I guess there's two questions. One, do we need to see a fourth fight to close this book for good? And the other question, will we see a fourth fight?
Yeah, those are the two separate questions. I don't need to see a fourth fight. I came away from that one feeling like Dustin is the better fighter right now and has been in these two fights this year and will be 18 months from now when they do it for a fourth time, because they will do it for a fourth time. I mean, Dustin's answer, I kind of expected Dustin to shoot it down at the press conference afterwards. And as soon as somebody asked, he was like, oh, we're not done. Like, whether it's outside on the sidewalk or in the octagon, we're doing it again, because you don't say the things that he said and not have to pay for them. And so when you take that animosity and combine it with Conor's marketability, that's never going to wane. Like, you see in the aftermath of this that no matter what happens, there are people that are going to loyally stand behind this dude and buy every fight he's in. And so you get another opportunity to do a fight that did 1.7 or 1.8 million pay-per-view buys. It's going to happen again. I don't necessarily need to see it. I think we get a similar outcome to the first fight. I don't hope we get a similar outcome to this one, obviously. I don't want anybody to break their leg. But I think it ends up being the same result and doesn't really move us forward anywhere in this division that always kind of feels like it gets backed up a little bit because of stuff like this.
AK, if for those who listen to On to the Next One, we know that you have no desire to see a fourth fight, but I have made this point and people have kind of chastised me for it. Some people agreed, but a lot of people disagreed. I feel that even if Dustin Poirier beats Charles Oliveira and becomes the champion, the second Conor McGregor is ready to come back, even though he's gotten finished in two straight fights and three out of four, that they're going to throw him into a title fight with Dustin Poirier. And people are like, there's no way. They can't force Dustin to take this fight. Force him. You know how much money he's going to make to fight Conor a fourth time with a title on the line? This thing did 1.8 million pay-per-view buys for a card that kind of like didn't really get cooking until fight week. What do you think is going to happen 18 months from now when the comeback is on? There's a title on the line, and we have this fourth fight once and for all. Could it do better than 1.8 million? We're going to see this fight, right? Am I nuts?
I don't know if it does better than 1.8 mil, but the fact that it's like minimum 1.5 mil is like insane. It's insane when you compare it to, again, that your average UFC card these days. Mike, you're right. I personally don't want to see it. I didn't want to see the third fight. I tweeted something out to the effect of like, I want to see Davy Grant Chito Vera 3 more than I want to see, you know, McGregor Poirier 3. And I wasn't even joking. Like, I honestly didn't care. I'm human, of course. Also, you know, it's our job. We covered the fight. I find it intriguing. It's Conor McGregor. He's the biggest name in the sport. But, you know, there's other matchups I want to see him in. That said, if I'm Dustin Poirier, I want to fight Conor McGregor forever. I want to get that title. I want to fight Oliveira. I want to win that title. And I really had to think about it today because there was just some discussion. Someone reminded me that, you know, Hotfield, the card wasn't going to fall apart if, for whatever reason, let's say Conor McGregor couldn't compete. Let's say he had to pull out because of he had leg injuries. RDA, Rafael Dos Anjos, was there. You know, he did weigh in as a replacement. So maybe that lends credence to the theory that UFC thought there was a chance, you know, something might happen with Conor. But putting that aside, if the card had gone down with the Dustin Poirier, Rafael Dos Anjos main event, that does maybe 400,000 buys tops, and that's including people who maybe ordered the pay-per-view ahead of time and are just like, well, I'm gonna watch it anyway, forget it. I've already ordered, I'm not pulling out. So maybe I'm wrong, maybe 500,000. I don't know how much cachet Poirier has as a pay-per-view draw. RDA I think is certainly not as big of a star as Poirier or McGregor, so it would really be more Poirier, but 500,000 tops, I'm really thinking close to 400,000. And again, when you're Poirier and you're getting pay-per-view points, the difference between 400,000 and 1.8 million. I'm not a doctor, guys. It's a lot of money. And it's more than he'll ever get to fight anybody. Even Oliveira, I think it's 500,000 tops. So I'm against it. But if Dustin Poirier said, look, I'm willing to fight this guy for eternity and do even diminishing returns, 1.5 million, the next time it's 1.2 million, then it's just 1 million for the sixth time they fight. That's still just so much more money. Like, we can't even figure out how much more money that is than he would normally get for anyone else. So I don't like it. But it's very, very likely going to happen.
It's true. We're all in agreement. This fight will happen at some point. Dustin will not be Dustin's next fight. Probably won't be two fights from now. But as soon as Conor's ready, get ready for it, because it's going to happen. But the story will continue on. We will see where it officially goes. But let's talk more about some of the other storylines coming out of UFC 264. But the point for Raw 1 goes to... the man who put maybe the greatest reality show ever into the world for us, Spencer Kite, gets the point, because Conor on a scooter for the next 18 months is just must-see TV. Oh, I can't get enough of that. I just want
to... Money.
I want,
it's money.
Yeah. It's money.
Scooter
different
adventures.
Rap songs. Yeah, he's got to sing a different rap song every time, put a different spin on it. But
the NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
So UFC 264, obviously that was what was on the marquee, Poirier McGregor 3, but there are some other fights, some intriguing fights, like the co-main event. Gilbert Burns defeats Stephen Thompson via unanimous decision. There were a lot of people, the T-Mobile Arena, Dana White being one of them, that didn't think the fight was very good, that it wasn't an entertaining showing, but Gilbert Burns goes in there and he gets it done. I thought, honestly, AK, and I've talked about this on to the next one, I thought he had a hell of a night. What did you think of Gilbert's performance? And do you think that there's a part of these feelings from people, maybe Dana, I don't know if Dana specifically, but from like the fans, it stems from the fact that Wonder Boy's title aspirations seem to be a thing of the past now, and they just like him so much, and it's just such a heartbreaking moment for him?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I mean, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is genuinely one of the nicest human beings walking the earth. He's a dude you have to root for. You could argue that the case he made before that fight for challenging for the title had some legitimacy. Maybe you don't hustle him in there off the two wins that he had, but you know, it's not a rematch. And it looks like we got the rematch with Masvidal. It looks like we're going to get a rematch with Colby. So it would have been a fresh matchup. And now that's gone by the wayside. I think some of it too is just what we kind of always see and always experience covering this sport, is that when you get a exciting striker like Wonderboy can be, people want to see him be an exciting striker. And if you're the guy that's going to come in here and shut that down and wrestle him to the ground, and Steven being good enough on the ground that you're not necessarily going to advance and get a bunch of submissions and attack positions, it kind of makes for just a tactical fight. And there aren't a lot of people necessarily that like tactical fights. Dana White often being one of them. A lot of the people in attendance at the T-Mobile Arena who are back out into civilization for the first time, wanting to just have this raucous night coming off of Tai Tuivasa's knockout and Irene Aldana's knockout, that want to just see more chaos, get a very kind of slowed down, methodical fight. And so I think that's where the reactions come from. It's hard to see Wonderboy miss out on those opportunities, but it was a great performance by Gilbert Burns.
AK, what did you think of the fight and just Gilbert overall, man? Like, I thought his work on the stick afterwards was phenomenal. Like, I thought he played it to perfection. And I actually spoke with Gilbert Burns earlier today. You'll hear that interview on What the Heck, and he kind of explained his reasoning behind that promo after the fight, and it's pretty awesome. So looking forward to Tuesday morning when that drops. But what did you think of Gilbert's performance overall? Like, not just the fight, but, you know, everything that happened after the final horn, the interview with Joe Rogan, all of that. What would you grade him?
What the hell is wrong with MMA fans that they're booing and criticizing Gilbert Burns? He's a super nice guy.
Yeah,
he did a great job with the post-fight promo. He reacted in the moment. He felt the boo. He said the boos were coming. All right. Well, I think whatever he was going to say after, he probably switched up a little bit. So he did a great job with that. It wasn't like this canned promo. I'm sure he knew whose names he was going to call out. But you know, he tweaked it. He had a basic idea of what he wanted to say and tweaked it based on the scenario. That was great. The fight was good. Like, it wasn't a super exciting fight. But he did. His game plan was excellent. I think he clearly won. I don't know if there should be any controversy there. Don't blame him for stifling Wonder Boy's title chances when, again, the UFC could have given Stephen Thompson a title shot, arguably, instead of giving Jorge Masvidal a title shot off of a loss. That's not Gilbert Burns' fault. Don't blame them for that. Don't blame them because they would rather see Colby Covington and Usman fight again, then give him a fresh Usman a fresh challenger and Wonder Boy. That's the UFC's call. So if you're wondering, did Gilbert Burns stop him? Yes, but guess who else did? The UFC. Okay, so don't be mad at Gilbert Burns. And there is this horrible Like, there's this horrible revisionist history that I saw, at least, again, looking at stupid comments online, saying, like, oh, Burns is, like, a boring fighter. I'm like, Gilbert Burns is a – this guy's been, like, smoking people at welterweight. Like, even the fight with Usman was super exciting. And he, the one he lost, the Woodley fight was a bit methodical, but it was certainly amazing to see him dominate a former champion like that. It's like, Gilbert Burns is boring. What is going on here? And Dana White, again, to just to, you know, go after Dana White, as we in the so-called MMA media love to do, I can't stand him, like, saying it was a bad performance. Like, this is, he's so influential. And all it takes is him saying something like that for a lot of fans to go, like, to kind of confirm, you know, what fans thought they saw. Because, like, it's true. Again, it was a methodical performance. It wasn't a barn-burning fight. So if any fans are kind of like, yeah, I'm not sure if I like that, then something Dana White says, you know, he kind of sits down on it, and it's like, oh yeah, oh well, Gilbert Burns just sucks. It's like Dana White has the power to kind of turn things around like that and kind of shift, you know, help shift people's opinions, which he should do as a promoter. And for him to criticize Gilbert Burns, and for anyone to criticize Gilbert Burns, is so frustrating to me, Mike. I thought Gilbert Burns did a great job and was one of the standout fighters of UFC 264. I think that's the only way to look at it.
Shout out to Al. They weren't booing Gilbert Burns. They were saying Boo-erns.
Yes.
Well played.
I'm angry with myself for not recognizing that opportunity.
I can't believe you didn't say that, AK. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, that is such an AK thing to say. But no, so Tai Tuivasa gets the big win. Irina Aldana, great win. A little bit of an asterisk on it because she missed weight. But one of the big storylines coming out of this event was the first fight of the main card between Sean O'Malley and New England's Chris Moutinho. This was a clinic from Sean O'Malley offensively. He looked sensational, but the heart of Chris Moutinho, his ability to take punishment, it stole a big chunk of the narrative. And the other big piece of this puzzle, Spencer, and I'll go back to you on this one, was the stoppage. Like, did Herb Dean make the right call not stopping the fight? Because I think we can all agree the stoppage could have and should have happened at some point in this fight, but he waited until the final 27 seconds of the third round to stop it. So do you agree with the stoppage, or at that point, that deep in the fight, should have Herb Dean have let Chris get to the final horn?
I agree with the stoppage because I'm always going to side on the side of fighter safety and protecting these athletes. Watching it back and even watching it live, it felt to me like Herb was kind of in that I'm getting ready to stop this fight stance that he gets into for about 2 minutes, and kind of just was waiting for an opportunity and waiting to see sort of it sounds bad if I say waiting to see the punishment pile up, but just kind of waiting to see how Chris Moutinho reacted to it. And if there were moments where he was slowing down or got stopped. Do I understand all the people, you know, saying let the kid go the next 27 minutes? What's the 27 seconds? What's the big deal? Absolutely. I get it. He put on a hell of a performance in terms of showing how gritty and tough and, you know, competitive he can be in there and make you want to see his next fight. But he got lit up. Like, let's be clear. Sean O'Malley, as you said, put on a clinic. More than 70% landed in terms of significant strikes, up over 200 significant strikes. So it's not like this was a competitive fight where Chris Moutinho got robbed of sort of that last second opportunity. And if we're clinging to the, well, you never know what's going to happen in the last 27 seconds. Yeah, we do. He's going to get punched in the head a bunch more, and he's going to keep walking forward, and it's going to be an even wider margin of victory. So I have no quarrel with it. I think he could have stopped it earlier, but I also kind of understand the people saying, let him just get to the buzzer.
AK, now that you've had some days to digest this, and we've talked about this before, and, you know, and I even said this on Sunday, had Herb Dean stopped it before the second round, I'd have no issue. Had he stopped it midway through the second round, I'd have no issue. Had he stopped it before the third round, I don't think anybody would have any issue with any of these scenarios. But it was the fact that he waited till there's 27 seconds left. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I don't have an issue with the stoppage at all. I just kind of, at that point, like, if you're going to let it go that deep and let him take 230 strikes, like, what's 10 more? You know what I mean? Like, it can be a lot. I get that from, like, a medical perspective. We want to see these guys be as healthy as possible. But you got to watch the interview with Chris Moutinho that I did for What the Heck. You got his side of it. Has your stance changed at all? Like, should her? What was your thought on the stoppage now that you've heard pretty much all sides to this?
Let me say first that this is the definition of a controversial stoppage, not necessarily a bad stop. I know I'm not going to say bad stoppage, but I think controversial is perfect for it because I think there's so many legitimate arguments to be made around it. Was it too late in the fight? Was it early in the moment with 30 seconds remaining? Could Moutinho's corner have considered stopping the fight at an earlier time? How close was O'Malley to really landing like a bomb that would have put him down and ended the fight? And again, taking the decision almost out of the hands of Herb Dean and just made it a straight KO. Forget TKO. You know, he could have been one or two shots away from actually knocking Moutinho straight out. Hard to believe considering how much punishment Moutinho had taken up to that point. But I'm just saying these are all the kinds of things we can discuss about this this again controversial stoppage, and that's okay. Because we've had some Herb Dean stoppages that are just objectively bad. Like when we say controversial sometimes, that's our nice way of saying like, oh, this guy effed up. So in this case, I don't think he effed up. I really don't. I personally don't think he effed up. And I've seen strong arguments for both sides. So Moutinho, look, I having heard his side of the story, certainly he would have wanted to continue. Certainly he knows he wasn't going to win the fight. But for a fighter, there is a big difference between seeing, I made it to all the distance, or this is another stoppage on my resume. Because I think he came in with like four stoppage losses, and now this is number five. And in his mind, he's just kind of like, this shouldn't be lumped in with those. This wasn't a stoppage. That is not how he lost his time. This should have been a decision loss. And I understand that. And the other thing is, I do respect his mentality of thinking, even though it's, he was not going to win the fight, but I like his mentality of if there was two more rounds, who knows what could have happened. He felt he was coming on strong. He said he was, I think for lack of a better phrase in his interview with you, Mike, he said that he felt O'Malley was getting scared near the end of the fight. Concerned, I think, is more really what he means. Not like scared, like frightened, more concerned. And just to put a capper on it, look, if anyone saw the medical suspensions, the official medical suspensions that came out, Chris Moutinho, I think minimum suspension. He could compete again as early as like, first week of September. Sean O'Malley, injuries to both his hands. I think his like one of his feet and then one of his like ankles or something. And he's potentially out for 6 months. We might not see Sean O'Malley until January. So I don't know. Who knows how correct Moutinho really was that the tide was turning. But it took its toll on both men. Apparently, more so on Sean O'Malley. So pretty wild stuff.
We'll move on for the interest of time. But I will say one of my favorite things to come out of the weekend was, and I don't know who did it, and if anybody knows who did it, give them a shout out. Let me know. Tag them on Twitter or whatever. Someone created a meme of Randy Marsh from South Park with green hair and it said, "Hey O'Malley, I didn't hear no bell." That was amazing. So kudos to whoever did that. But we'll go from one crazy event to another crazy event that happened earlier this week, and it's going to be with us for another 5 to 6 weeks at least. But the point for round two goes to the birthday boy, Alexander K. Lee. It is 1-1. Good stuff, gentlemen. And now let's go to the reason that everybody is watching this program right now. We're going to shift to the boxing world because it is now official. August 29th, Cleveland, Ohio, Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley is happening. The former UFC welterweight champion is heading to the YouTubers' hometown of Cleveland, and this fight is actually happening. Of course, we had the press conference on Tuesday featuring Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley, and a giant robot. So, AK, we're going to start with you this time. Did you watch the press conference? And if so, what did you think of it? Did it do its job?
I certainly did watch it, and I actually think it did do its job. If you're asking, did it do its job of maybe, you know, getting people who are on the fence or maybe even catching the attention of people who are kind of, again, like I said, they now have the official date. I think it did help. I didn't think things got out of hand in like an annoying way. We've seen that with press conferences where there's a lot of like back and forth. There was some of that for sure. But I don't think either guy came off in like that such that abrasive way that you're like, well, I don't want to see either of these guys fight. Like, I just never want to see anything from either of these guys again. I thought they properly sold the fight. There was a few dumb personal insults in there, as was to be expected. But overall, there is like, I think Woodley is such a more intriguing opponent, athletically speaking, than Ben Askren. Can he sell a fight like Ben Askren? Does he have kind of like that it factor that Ben Askren has or had going into that Jake Paul fight? Maybe not. You know, Ben Askren's a character. I would not describe Tyron Woodley that way. So, but again, this has the feel of, and I can't believe I'm using this word, legitimacy. Like, it's that was kind of the strangest thing while I was watching it, is that there was a certain it was almost mundane, but like in a good way. Like, we're getting used to it. We're getting used to these Jake Paul celebrity boxing things happening. And with that comes with sort of this like acceptance, this almost like broader acceptance that these fights are not going away, that they are, for the most part, worthy of your attention. Again, especially if you enjoyed Logan Paul versus Floyd Mayweather, if you enjoyed Jake Paul versus Ben Askren, if you enjoyed the first Thriller event with Jake Paul and Nate Robinson and Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. and all that stuff that happened. If you enjoyed that, it's almost becoming not a guilty pleasure. It almost becomes a thing, again, where we've accepted this is now part of the combat sports field. This is its own genre. There's kickboxing, bare knuckle boxing, combat jiu-jitsu, and now celebrity boxing. It's its own brand of combat sports. And I thought the press conference was really good. I thought the robot, whoever's in the robot suit, needs to get a raise. Reveal yourself who you are, hero, because he didn't stop working. He was like punctuating all of Jake Paul's statements in the background. Really, the camera should have been focused on him all the whole time. I think our main fighting footage did a great job of zooming in on him when we could. But he really needed his separate cam. Way to go. Pat ourselves on the back. Because I thought it was a good press conference. Not the most like controversial, super exciting press conference, but I don't think that's what this fight needs. I think this fight needs is, again, what I said before, some sense of legitimacy. And I think, heaven help us, I think we got it.
Spencer, what did you think of the press conference? Did you watch it? Did you at least watch highlights? Like, what were your thoughts on the whole thing and on the build to August 29th?
I didn't watch it. And the fact that AK is using the word legitimacy and then running down the opponents that Jake Paul has fought, being Nate Robinson and Ben Askren, as markers for this is becoming a legitimate thing and there's a robot involved, and like it's just like if we're qualifying that as legitimate, and I get it, like people are into this and people absolutely want to see it, and I don't knock Showtime for getting involved. And shout out to the Paul brothers for getting their money. Shout out to Tyron Woodley for getting his in this, and Ben Askren for getting his from earlier this year. But like, just because people are interested and just because it has a platform doesn't necessarily mean that we have to treat this like some kind of legitimate sporting event and put it on the same level as some of this other combat sports, some of the other combat sports that we get. Or even just like legitimate entertainment. This is carnival barker stuff. I'm cool with it. Do it. Have at it. But like to use the word legitimacy about this kind of feels a little bit weird, because you said there was a robot that was doing the most work at the press conference and was the breakout star of the press conference. And I can't think of any other sporting event where that's the big takeaway and that's the thing that makes it legitimate. And so for me, look, I'm interested because I do think it is obviously a much more competitive fight than the Ben Askren fight was. I think, you know, Jake Paul, you got to give him credit. He really is putting in as much work as he can to become a legitimate boxer. And I think Tyron Woodley, even though he's up into his late 30s and, you know, kind of left the UFC on a low, he is the most accomplished in terms of athleticism and an athletic talent guy that's been in the ring with Jake Paul. And so it should, I hope, be a much more competitive fight. And I think people are going to be interested. And I think the group that was going to be interested and into this fight already didn't need any more convincing. And so did the press conference and everything that came out of it sway a few more people over to be interested in it? Probably. That's what a press conference is for. But in terms of, you know, is this a legitimate sporting endeavor and this stuff's getting real? Like, I don't know, man. And until I see him fight an actual boxer, I'm going to have some problems calling Jake Paul legitimate.
So, AK, we did a reaction podcast to this press conference. It was Sean Al-Shadi, myself, and Damon Martin. And we're trying to find the right words to express how we feel heading into this fight. And one of the words I threw out that was seemed to be the word of most debate was excited. And everyone wrestled with that word. And I'm curious, AK, are you excited for this fight? Like, not the circus and not the build and the silliness, but the actual fight itself. Like, are you excited to see Jake Paul box Tyron Woodley?
I am legitimate excited. There's that word again. Capital L, capital E. I am legitimately excited, guys. I thought the Askren Jake Paul. I am on record on so many of our shows saying this. I was super intrigued by the Jake Paul Ben Askren fight, and I'm even more intrigued by this one because I think we view Tyron Woodley as a little more of a striker for sure. He has highlight reel knockouts on his record in MMA. Completely different sport, I understand, but the thought of Ben Askren landing like a KO blow on Jake Paul, excuse me, I totally forgot his name for a second. Jake Paul, it was like a pipe dream. It's like that's probably not going to happen. The thought of Tyron Woodley doing it, it doesn't seem completely unbelievable. Again, we don't know how Tyron's going to look in a straight up boxing match, but we know he has power. We know he's not the kind of guy. You know, there was a lot of cracks about Askren's like dad bod physique before that fight. That's not going to happen with Tyron Woodley. The guy is in immaculate shape. Say what you want about his performances. Maybe the body and the mind aren't quite as willing to pull the trigger anymore in a high level UFC fight. But he's certainly still in great athletic shape, and that's a big sell for this fight. So it's just on a basic primal level of Jake Paul leveling up competition wise, and now is he facing a more legitimate opponent in Woodley? It certainly feels that way. And the only way to find out if it's real or not is to watch the actual fight. And that is the appeal of it. That is what makes it so exciting. Will it be a good fight? I don't know. Again, how do we define good in this scenario? I think it's going to vary from person to person. But I think as soon as fight night rolls around, I know I'm going to be super into it. And I think a lot of people who tuned in are not going to regret that they invested their time in it.
Spencer, something tells me that excited is not one of the words that's on top of mind when it comes to this fight. So if you could put a word to it in terms of how you're feeling heading into August 29th, what word would you use and why?
I'm certainly intrigued because, like I said, I give Jake Paul credit for the steps he's taken and the effort he's committed to building himself as a boxer and trying to develop this. He's certainly much more refined at it and seems like he's put a lot more energy into it than his brother, who looked like he was just out there swinging for the fences and, you know, throwing ugly punches against Floyd Mayweather. And I'm intrigued to see what he does against a guy that, you know, is a former UFC champion and is still in great shape and should, as we've said, be a level up in terms of competition, because this is sort of the way you see if there is legitimacy here and if there is something beyond just being spectacle here. So I'll certainly pay attention in terms of getting some results, getting some, you know, replays and highlights through Twitter, but it's not a like appointment viewing for me where I'm planning this out to sit down on my couch that night and take it all in. If he goes out and beats Tyron Woodley, though, like even I will come back on this show and offer a mea culpa to AK Lee, to Jake Paul, to literally everybody for me calling it illegitimate or questioning the legitimacy of this. Because if he goes out there and beats Tyron Woodley, then it's something we need to talk about more and pay more attention to, because then it's, you know, it's not beaten, as you said. it's not beating Ben Askren, who really stood not a lot of chance of going out there and landing a big shot to win that fight. But Tyron has that potential, and he should have that, or he should have that potential. And we'll find out if he does.
First of all, there's nothing more legitimate than a robot being involved in fight promotion. Ask the UFC. They know this during their days with Fox. And also, there's nothing makes a fight more legitimate than a tattoo bet. And that's what we have here. The stakes are high, gentlemen. The stakes are high heading into August 29th.
We have Spencer's bet now. Now Spencer is saying he will retract what he is. He will look back on this retroactively as a legitimate athletic contest. Should Jake Paul win? So that's really what to be. The tattoo thing is super cool. This is what I'm really waiting for. I cannot wait to see this man's world turned upside down. I don't want to see those goalposts moved again, Spencer. All right. Those goalposts are set.
He goes out and beats Tyron Woodley. I will be the first one all up in your mentions saying you were right. I was wrong. I bow down. If I win today and Jake Paul wins, I hereby solemnly do promise that I will accept the no contest in this contest.
I think even more so what we should do, and you can hopefully find a way to do this, if this happens, you have to issue an apology via video, but riding around in a motorized cart, a la Conor McGregor.
I will find a scooter. There are certainly scooters at several big box stores around here. I will commandeer one, grab a selfie stick, and just bomb around, rapping and apologizing to AK Lee.
I might just be rooting for Jake Paul now, cruising
through the aisles of Costco.
I'll have to do something as well in return, so we'll figure that out. But yeah, obviously, I mean, if you're gonna put all that in the line, I gotta do something. So
bet within a bet. This is a beautiful thing. And the good news is we have five or so full weeks to build upon this into August 29th. So get your robot costumes ready and buckle up. And just like we should buckle up for the final round of regulation, the point for round three goes to AK, 2-1. Good stuff. This is a tough one. Woo. Proverbial flip of the old coin as we...
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We head to the weekend to come for our wonderful sport of mixed martial arts. There is no Jake Paul fight. We have two events on the calendar. There's more, but two are at sort of the forefront. We got Bellator 262, which comes up tomorrow night on Showtime. Flyweight title on the line in the main event, Juliana Velasquez versus Denise Kielholz. We got Tyrell Fortune versus Matt Mitrione. Cody Law is back. Johnny Eblen is back. Some good prospects, some interesting fights for sure. The UFC is back on Saturday. This was supposed to be Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez. Injury to Holloway scratches that fight. Now the new main event is Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises. We got the return of Misha Tate against the soon-to-be-retired Marion Renault. Jeremy Stevens versus Batoush Gamrod. He's had some wonderful comments this week, which we're not going to get into, and more. So, Spencer, we go back to you, my friend. Who's bringing the better card to the table on this weekend, the UFC or Bellator, and why?
For me, it's the UFC, but it's not by a wide margin. Shout out to some of the people competing on Bellator. Juliana Velasquez is a terrific fighter. Very much interested in seeing that fight. I think it's a good matchup. I want to see what she does in her first title defense. Shout out to Matt Mitrione for his "I throw hands, son" comment today that made the waves, made the rounds on on the internet as somebody like started out the question, just like, hey, Matt, you just keep losing. And he was like, cool, that's how we're doing this. All right, sure, let's go. And then he asked him how he's going to win. And he said in pure meat fashion, I throw hands, son. That's what I do. There are some good prospects, as you mentioned. Very curious to see what they do. But it also feels like kind of the standard Bellator play with some of their prospects where they're in highly winnable fights as opposed to competitive fights that are necessarily going to give us a lot of instruction about what they can do in the future. And I just like a bunch of the prospects and a bunch of the matchups on the UFC card a little bit more. Gabriel Benitez and Billy Quarantillo is violence guaranteed. Certainly looking forward to that one. I think Amanda Lemoyche and Montserrat Ruiz is a really interesting fight in a division where Amanda Lemoyche has looked really great in her last three fights. You mentioned Matoish Gamrot. I spoke to him earlier this week. Super interested to see what he does against Jeremy Stephens, who, even though he doesn't have a win in his last five fights, look at who he's been facing. Look at who it is that has beaten him. He's still a tough out. I think that's a really good litmus test for Gamer. We get the return of Miesha Tate. We get a really competitive main event that, to me, I know it's not the fight that people necessarily wanted for Islam Makhachev, and that's because nobody wants to fight this dude. And if Thiago Moises, who is also a kind of unheralded, unsung dude on a three-fight winning streak, goes out there and beats him, then we suddenly have a brand new contender in the division. And that's kind of what I'm always looking for. And so shout out to Bellator for a good card, an interesting card, but I give it to the UFC on Saturday.
AK, what do you think? Because like we've talked about many times on this show and other shows, the pay-per-view hangovers are real. UFC 264, storyline ridden, kind of makes these upcoming cards fly under the radar. Like, there should be a lot more fanfare around the fact that Islam Makhachev is fighting, that Miesha Tate is coming back. It's just not really there, and it's not their fault. It's just what happened with 264 and everything that's come from it. And then Bellator's coming back. This is the card, sort of the go-home show to the one everyone's got their eyes on at the end of the month. That's headlined by Patricio Pitbull versus AJ McKee. So two fight cards that are interesting in their own ways, but they're not really in the most interesting times, if you will, with everything else going on. So with that being said, which card sticks out to you top to bottom more? Do you like the Bellator card better, or do you like the UFC card better?
Well, the good news is people don't have to choose. You know, I'm the prince of positivity. I would tell people, if you guys are looking for fights this weekend, remember, Bellator's on Friday, UFC's on Saturday. You can watch both. You don't have to choose. So that's awesome. I'll make the case for Bellator. So I'm certainly, for all the reasons that Spencer mentioned, I'm very excited for the UFC card. I'm very excited to see Rodolfo Vieira come back. I thought that last fight was, I mean, obviously exciting as hell and completely unexpected what happened to him. But I think he's a truly an original type fighter, and I want to see that. So the thing, before I get into Bellator, so the thing with the UFC card is, it feels like, I will see if I can phrase this correctly. For a lot of these fighters, it's not, they're one fight away from what's going to really be their big fight, if that makes sense. Makhachev versus Moises is not the matchup that a lot of people want to see for Makhachev. I think it's a cool fight on paper, but I think obviously people have been, Mike, you know, on our matchmaking show, matchmaking Makhachev with people in like the top five. Like, they just want to see Makhachev make a big, big jump up. So this is a good fight. I don't know if it's this must-see fight that if you're a Makhachev fan that you're like, I have to see this one. I think that's the next one. It will be his big opponent. Same with Miesha Tate. You know, this is her comeback fight. They're giving us another solid veteran in Marion Renault, who is going to retire after this fight. And you feel like Miesha Tate, should she win, her next fight is really going to be the can't-miss one. I'll say the same thing about Matoush Gamrot. Dan Rodriguez, again, he lost his original opponent, so he's now facing a newcomer. His next fight, I think, is going to be the one to watch. Khalid Taha, Sergey Morozov, both great prospects. I think, again, their next fight will be the great one. So it's kind of, obviously, if you're a hardcore fan, like I said, you don't want to miss either card. But this UFC card is like, for a lot of people, it's the one before their fight that's really going to make an impact. Bellator, somewhat the same way, but some of the fights are so, like, I like that it's prospect building. I like that we're going to see, hopefully, highlights for like Johnny Eblen, for Diana Avsaragova. That I like cards that are built this way. I think you have an Arlene Blanco on there. She's always an exciting fight, so I like her a lot. And then you have the potential for a big knockout in Taro Fortune and Matt Mitrione. But I'm really jazzed up. I'm probably overselling the card a bit because of how jazzed up I am for the main event. I actually really like the Juliana Velasquez, Denise Kielholz matchup. I haven't taken a good look at the odds. It's my understanding that Denise Kielholz is a pretty sizable underdog, which is reasonable, I suppose, given that Velasquez is undefeated and has looked great in Bellator. But I think Kielholz is actually a very, very, very dangerous challenger. I like her story, how she got to this title shot. Obviously, she's the former Bellator kickboxing champion. So this, to me, is a really high-level flyweight fight. And I think flyweight, of course, is one of the most underrated divisions across MMA, both in the UFC and in Bellator and elsewhere that has flyweight divisions. So the main event, I think I like the Bellator main event more. Now, again, not take away from Makhachev, because he's a future star for sure. But I like the Bellator main event more. So just on the strength of that, plus some of the other reasons I kind of mentioned, I'm giving Bellator the slight edge.
Let me just, back to the Mitrione thing, Kevin or whoever the media member was immediately comes out and says, Mitrione, you're 0-5. By the way, he's not 0-5. He's 2-3-1 in his last six fights. There's no contest. He's lost three in a row. He hasn't lost. He's not 0-5. So yeah, Mitrione was on fire. Kudos to him for that. And by the way, AK, just so you know, via our friends at DK Nation, Juliana Velasquez, a -335 favorite. The comeback on Denise Kielholz is +240, which, let me compare it to the UFC one, which I'm sure is just outrageous. Islam Makhachev is probably like one of the bigger main event -670.
Wow.
Comeback on Thiago Moises is +450. I can't remember the last time a main event was lined that spread. But Spence, let me go back to you, because you write a lot of stories, you talk to a lot of these fighters, and you give us reasons to care and reasons that fights get built, and you shine a spotlight upon them. So listen, I think Miesha Tate is obviously the biggest storyline of the weekend in your eyes, but outside of that, and maybe even outside of Islam Makhachev, what stands out to you when you think of storylines for this weekend in MMA? Like, what's something that has caught your attention that maybe not a lot of people are thinking about?
I think for me, it's Amanda Lemoyne. I mean, she comes back off a 2-year suspension, popped hot for something after a fight with Leslie Smith. She moves down two divisions to 115 and comes out and has two finishes and three straight victories. She absolutely torched Livia Hanata Souza last time out, a former Invicta champ. And that to me was an eye-opening performance. She's at number 14, I think, in the UFC rankings right now. And goes into this fight against Montserrat Ruiz, who had a tremendous performance, in my opinion, in her debut. Just kind of bulldog choking Cheyenne Bays for 15 minutes. Cheyenne gets up and curses at her afterwards and wants to meet her out back to continue fighting, which is always entertaining. And so that, to me, in a division that we kind of recognize as maybe the most competitive of the UFC women's weight classes, 115, is a really entertaining fight, a really interesting fight to me, where the winner isn't necessarily in title contention, but they move into that group with the really established names and really familiar fighters like Angela Hill, like Claudia Gadella, like Michelle Watterson, where you're one or two away. And so to what AK is saying about this card being full of fights where guys are maybe one or two fights away, I agree, and that's far more compelling and far more interesting to me to see that build between contenders and competitive fights than seeing a Johnny Eblen go out and get another dominant victory where I'm not learning as much about him, or seeing Cody Law look great for another fight where I'm not necessarily seeing him in there getting tested. I'm more focused on seeing people get tested and move up than really get that showcase spotlight opportunity.
Yes, but what if Johnny Eblen came out with a robot, Spencer? Would that change your...
If he comes out with a robot and the robot is doing a lot of work, then yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get the MMA fighting camera people out there to film it and focus in on the robot again, and we're gold. And I will certainly, again, apologize for not giving the robot enough love. But I mean, to me, I want to see these. And look, it's, again, nothing against Bellator. I like the way they build their cards. I do like that they give some of these athletes these opportunities to have these spotlight fights where you start building their name. But at a certain point, they got to get in there with somebody. And they got to get in there with somebody that's going to test them. And I think right now this card is built more with showcase opportunities than fights where people are going to get tested. And so I still kind of stick with the UFC on Saturday as being the top to bottom better card for me.
What storyline sticks out to you, AK, that maybe people aren't talking about?
I did say the main event, but I do think there's the Bellator main event, But I do think that there is some, some intrigue there, at least as much as there can be for sort of a Bellator flyweight title fight that no longer involves, you know, Aleem Aleem McFarlane, who they had done a great job building up. So this is the first title fight in a few years now that doesn't feature her. And she had a lot of good storyline hooks. So I think... I'll go to the UFC for this one. What I think the storyline is, I'm so intrigued by seeing how Rodolfo Vieira does bouncing back from that loss, because we have seen many like outstanding jiu-jitsu fighters who, when they kind of hit that first road bump in MMA, they don't always respond in the best way. Some of them just disappear. For being honest, some of them just don't compete. Where's Cron Gracie? You know what I mean? Where's Cron Gracie? I know he's going to fight again. I assume he's going to fight again. But it did feel like when he lost to Cub Swanson, that it was just like, okay, well, I'm going to take a step back from MMA now. I didn't enjoy that experience. And Vieira had one of the most miserable experiences that I think a jiu-jitsu specialist can have. He was submitted. This guy's an ADCC grappling champion. He was submitted in a wild fight that he looked like he was going to win in the first round. It's such a humbling thing. And our Guillermo Cruz had a great interview with Rodolfo, which I don't think it's out yet. It'll be out, of course, this week before fight night. And that story to me, hopefully when that story comes out, more people will look at this, because there's a lot of mockery that comes with a loss like that too, when you're known for being such a great grappler. So to me, it's very intriguing. I think they've given him a good matchup in Dustin Stolzfus, but he has to go out there and perform, and we'll see how serious he is about actually becoming like a UFC contender, because I think he can. But when you have these other options as a star grappler, you know, sometimes all it takes is one loss to derail you. So that's a fight I think people really need to pay attention to.
Well, the good news is we're going to have you covered for both of these events over at MMAfighting.com, so get excited. But regulation is now over. The all-important point for round four goes to... Spencer Kite. It is 2-2. Well done. And that means, to nobody's surprise, through 59 episodes of this program, we are going to the knockout round. And one question will decide it all. Neither competitor knows what this question is. I just thought of this question 30 seconds ago as I was just looking at our website. But they're each going to have 1 minute to respond to said question. Once that is done, we will turn it out over to the judge, the jury, the executive producer on the ones and twos, E. Casey Lydon. He will render the final decision, crown the winner with the help of the live studio audience. So, A.K. Lee, back-to-back victories under your belt. You have the champion's prerogative, if you will. So, do you want this question first, which you normally like to do, or do you want to pass the first option over to Spencer?
Mike, you know, it's unprecedented that I'm on a winning streak. So I think it's logically, it would be time for me to exhibit unprecedented behavior. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do exactly what people expect of me. I'm super predictable. Of course, I'm going first.
Wow. All right, Spencer. This is a big moment. Spencer's going to log some notes and get ready. But here's the question, AK. So I've had some pretty interesting conversations this week, one of which was with former UFC middleweight champion Luke Rockhold, who is looking to get back inside the octagon. And we had a nice conversation. We laughed. We smiled. But then we talked about his fighting career. And this man is frustrated because he hasn't been able to not only book a fight – but book a fight with somebody that even interests him. He's looking for a top 10 guy, or he's looking for something exciting. And he basically said, like, give me something that's going to get me out of bed, or just let me go. I'm not just taking any fight. So AK, if you're the UFC, if you are the middleweight matchmaker right now, what is your plan of action to get Luke Rockhold in there with the right opponent that makes everybody happy? We'll attempt to do some problem solving on the show this week with the knockout round, try to help everybody. So 1 minute on the clock. What do we do with Luke Rockhold that makes everybody happy? Your time starts now.
Well, Mike, I don't think there's anything that's going to make everybody happy. And it really, two things really suck. I would have loved to see another fight with Jacare Souza. He's no longer with the promotion. I would have loved to see another fight with Chris Weidman. Chris Weidman is obviously recovering from an injury. So I think the way to go is, I still think I would like to see him go up to 205. And I would hope it's still possible for him to fight Anthony Smith. I don't, maybe the heat from this is gone, but I haven't given up on that matchup. I don't think I ever gave up on it. They talk so much crap about each other. There's just something about their personalities that I feel like are oil and water. I don't know if it's where they come from. I don't know if it's how they were brought up. I just really believe those are two guys. If you put them in a room, they're just going to hate each other. They're going to be professional up to fight night, but I think they would legit hate each other. I also think it's an exciting style matchup. I think it's a, I mean, I would favor Anthony Smith pretty heavily, but I think if you ask, I think casual betting side, I think you get a lot of people who would believe Luke Rockhold could win that matchup. So I'm not giving up Anthony Smith, Luke Rockhold. I think that's the way to go.
All right, Spencer, over to you, my friend. Same question. How do we get Luke Rockhold the right fight? What is the right fight? How do we do it in a way where Luke's happy, the opponent's happy, fans are happy, the UFC, et cetera. Everybody is happy. 1 minute on the clock. Your time starts now.
Two words, Darren Till. We always talk about this guy as still being a title contender. He is absolutely going to talk a bunch of junk. He's got a bunch of people that are interested in him. He's going to come out there and throw shots. He's going to stand in the pocket and trade with Luke Rockhold. And that's, I think, what Luke Rockhold wants, is a guy that's going to put him right back in the mix. That's what he said. Darren Till's kind of in limbo right now. He fell out of another fight. We're not sure where he's at, what he's doing. I've been seeing some pictures of, you know, super puffy face Darren Till on Ariel Helwani's Twitter timeline lately. Give me that fight. Give me these two dudes just talking junk at each other for a couple of weeks, building up to a co-main event spot or even a main event spot on a fight night card where they get potentially five rounds. Winner gets into that middleweight title conversation, which is where both want to be. And it's something that doesn't take away from guys that are actually competing lately and on their way up. And lastly, I always have to shout out Casey's mustache. It's just phenomenal.
Wow. Smart play. He's watched this show, Casey. He knows that you gotta plant the seeds. Gotta talk about the baddest ash in MMA. So as we await for the fine people watching our program right now to chime in with how they feel this knockout round went, just a reminder, we will be covering both of these shows for you. Bellator 262 tomorrow, UFC Vegas 31 on Saturday. We will have a live preview show tomorrow for the UFC card at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. So join us for that. Bring your thoughts, your comments, your questions in regards to that event. And then we get a very busy week next week in the world of MMA. More on that coming up at the beginning of next week. But at this moment, it is time to turn it over to the man without sleeves, the man with the mustache, E. Casey Lydon, the man who captured the robot better than anybody for that press conference in LA. Casey, who wins?
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a great competition. Unfortunately, I can't pick the robot to win because clearly he is the winner. But for you two, gentlemen, what are people online saying? I can't say that out loud. Oh boy. Okay. Your winner. Oh man. The Canadian. And new Spencer guy. Congratulations.
Spencer gets the win.
The winning streak is over.
Wow. I thought Spencer might have shot himself in the foot, honestly, with that question, because Darren Till is supposed to fight Derek Brunson, although that fight is not official at this moment because there's dates and there's locations and geographical crap going on right now. But man, there you go. Congratulations, Spencer. You brought the noise. You brought the noise, my friend. Even though you insulted the robot, you still walk away with the victory. And with that, you don't get any money or a championship belt. You get 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, indifferent, plug your own stuff, whatever you want in regards to MMA.
I want to thank you guys first and foremost for having me. I want to thank Casey for siding with another E-period competitor. We all got to stick together. Shout out to people that said you picked Darren Till and you automatically win. Thank you for having me. I do stand by my promise. If Jake Paul goes out and looks good, I'm coming back to it for my closing. Jake Paul comes out and looks good, I will be back here. I will jump on a Rascal scooter and drive around the Costco singing rap songs and praising AK Lee. I am a man of my word. You can hold me to it. I look forward to coming back and defending my title whenever you guys can find me a suitable opponent.
Well, Spencer, the thing about this program is you win and you move on. So hopefully we can book you next week and you can defend your victory. I will say there is no actual champion right now. So I think this got really interesting. So more on that coming up next week, because I have an idea that's going to shake the foundation of BTL. But AK, the look in your eyes says it all. let's see. Ah, man, you're like the Miami Dolphins from the early 2010s right now.
I didn't respect him, Mike. I didn't respect him. You told me I was having a fellow Canadian on here, and you said who it was, and I'm not gonna lie. I said my reaction was him. I don't need to train for this. I'm sorry, Spencer. I'm just being real with people here.
Hey,
I said listen. I don't need to train for this. I don't need to fare it. I only blame myself. I feel like a fool.
I am happy to be the Dustin Poirier to your Conor McGregor. We can do this as many times over.
Don't say that.
The result is going to be the same every single time.
Wow.
I'm so salty right now. My sodium levels are at a very bad level
through
right now.
Through the roof.
Well, you guys are excellent competitors. I appreciate you both coming on here and spending a little over an hour with the fine folks watching and listening to this program right now. But we are getting out of here. Thank you so much for checking out the program. We will be back next week. However, there will be a little bit of a caveat mixed in. I'm going to be on the road. So when the show will happen, hopefully we will still make it happen on Thursday. It will probably be at a different time slot. So just throwing that out there. But that's it for AK, for Spencer, for the judge, the jury, the executive producer, E. Casey Lydon. I am Mike Heck. We'll see you next week. Once again, Between the Links, the iconic voice of Esther Lynn takes you home. Good night, everybody.
This has been Between the Links. I am Esther Lynn. You can tell because it's my beautiful voice. Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, AK. You suck.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.